Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to part two of this episode of Nerd Tween and Movie Podcast. I am your host, Nerdpool Prime, and I felt it was necessary to break up these two this episode into two parts because this will have a lot of spoilers in it for Army of the Dead, and I didn't want to spoil that and anyone who wanted to hear the first segment, so I posted that one earlier, so here's part two. This initially was just supposed to be a review, and then I will admit that I put on the movie again, and it turned into a semi-breakdown as well. So, much like a Zack Snyder film, it's going to be a little long and very detailed, but it's going to be worth it. So I want to start off and say, if you're listening to this on YouTube or Spotify or iHeart, whatever you're listening to, please give me a follow. It doesn't cost you anything. And I have some great content and some great stuff moving forward, which I will get to at the end of this episode. So I want to start off the review by saying thank you so much, Netflix, for letting Zack Snyder do his thing and let him release the movie that he intended to. If there's one thing that we know about Snyder and his work is that the director's cuts are usually a little bit longer, but so much better than the original theatrical releases. Take, you know, obviously the Snyder cut, which was a lot longer, but well worth it because that movie was so good for me. And I think it's one of the best comic book movies we ever had because of the last act alone was just fantastic. But like, take like the Watchmen, for example, the theatrical release was a jumbled mess and honestly not a very good movie at all. And then when they came out with Zack Snyder's director's cut, it was exponentially better. And we have learned apparently that, you know, when Zack Snyder is allowed to do what he wants to do, he could produce some, truly amazing work. So to Army of the Dead, it was a very bold and fresh take on the zombie mythos, and honestly the more I watch it, the faster it climbs on my list of all-time favorite zombie movies or shows. Snyder delivered a great film that was full of so many great scenes and moments. It's almost impossible to pick which ones stood out for me, but I'm going to definitely try. It had great acting with dynamic characters. And if you listen to the first half of this episode, you know what a dynamic character is. So if you haven't, go ahead and listen to that and then come on back. Like I said, it's a very brave take and a good story full of surprises. I usually pride myself on being unbelievably accurate in predicting things that happen in all forms of film. Like, for instance, I saw the 30-second teaser trailer for the Power Rangers movie a couple years back, and I figured out the twist that Rita Repulsa was the Green Ranger that killed all the other Rangers. Like, I saw just the trailer, and I was like, yep, I know exactly what's going to happen. I don't need to see this movie. But this movie had me guessing in the best ways. Like, I would be like, oh, this is about to happen, and then something different happens, which leads to something better, which obviously shows how good Zack Snyder really is at his job. The cinematography aspect was very impressive, while at times a little jarring. I will admit that Snyder chose to frame and focus on specific characters, which would leave the background or foreground blurry. So you focus on exactly what he wanted you to look at. And while it was definitely used well in many parts, there were some parts I was like, ooh, that's a little weird. Which was like a very little bit of a slight negative. So, you know, I'm not just going to praise and praise and praise because I feel like it or I want to kiss up to somebody. I'm going to give you my honest opinion. Snyder combines some of the best cinematic tropes to create a really fantastic zombie flick. A secret military project goes wrong, causing a zombie outbreak, forcing a ragtag group of mercenaries to attempt a bank heist with a ticking clock of impending doom that just happens to be a nuclear warhead. A prequel and a sequel are already greenlit by Netflix, meaning the story will continue, and I am extremely thankful for that. So again, thank you, Netflix, very much. And not For the record, again, obviously Netflix is not sponsoring this episode, but if they ever want to, I'm definitely game. But I just love their content right now, so I'm going to praise about it. Okay, so that being said, we are going to enter into spoiler territory. So if you have not seen Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead on Netflix, this is the end of this part of the episode for you. Go ahead and come back after you've seen it and listen and see if you agree with what I've said and go from there. You're still there. Also, be forewarned. This part is definitely not going to be completely safe for work or around young children. So please be warned. Some things that I will have to say regarding the film is not safe for all audiences. So you have been warned. All right, here we go. Grab your gear and let's get ready to rumble. All right, so the opening scene of this movie was nothing short of spectacular. The conversation between the two army guys transporting the alpha zombie, which will later be known as Zeus. At least it never was actually said that it was Zeus, but that's what he's listed as in the IMDb page. I mean, they threw out like every single conspiracy theory ever and mystical item, like the Holy Grail or aliens or Amelia Earhart still alive or the Declaration of Independence signed with the Founding Fathers' blood. All but, you know, they didn't mention zombies, which ironically is what they were actually hauling. I also think it's kind of fitting that the reason the zombie apocalypse, this little mini zombie apocalypse started, was because some douchebag was getting his dick sucked. like it's just kind of messed up that like that douche really is the one who started that, because if they would have, you know, been able to keep driving where they're going, I'm sure it would have been just fine. But obviously that's not how it happened. So this movie, in my opinion, also set itself apart with its music. It definitely wasn't going to be your standard zombie movie or horror movie, for that matter, soundtrack. Zack seems to have the ability to read into what the music is actually saying and pick what seems like completely random songs that should not belong, and then somehow they just fit when they line up with the movie. Like, it doesn't make any sense, almost. Like, Viva Las Vegas, like, sure, the movie takes place in Vegas, so it you know, has a correlation there, but it didn't have any business fitting the way it did, with how he did the slow motion montage of the start of the outbreak. I mean, it definitely works, but it really shouldn't. And it's a testament to how good he is at getting on. And, you know, I'm sure that also has something to do with the person who selected the music and who did the soundtrack as well. I mean, he definitely deserves some praise there too. But like, if you think about it, like the choice of having like Bad Moon Rising as like a montage song for the gearing up scene where all the you know, they go and get their gear, like he opens up his chest and pulls out his gun, and then you got the other characters digging out their gear from a barrel in the desert, or the other main character just diving into her like storage closet and being so happy that they are getting their gear ready and doing something instead of like just their regular lives. I mean, Batista's character was literally just like flipping burgers, you know, and he like was straight up like this super badass saving people, and then now he's flipping burgers, or, you know, turning into a mechanic, like Junkie XL. I mean, I'm sure they worked, cause they worked together on many projects together. I'm sure they picked this stuff on purpose because it was so good. Like Bad Moon Rising, like if you look at the lyrics, like, yeah, it definitely would fit. Cause it's, you know, like definitely seems like a pending doom type song, but it just didn't. I don't think it should have fit, but it definitely did. And the opening sequence set up everything great, because now, you know, the technology and the instruments of war that exist today sometimes make it hard to believe that, you know, zombies could overtake the whole world, you know, especially if it's just one place of an outbreak. Like, if you have it, like, where there's multiple, like, ground zeros or epicenters of the outbreak, then, yeah, it could possibly work. But, like, if it was just started in one place, and it's hard to imagine the way we have weapons today that it could really spread that far. I mean, in that slow motion montage, I mean, yeah, the army did get overrun, but they were able to block it off to where they couldn't get out with these steel containers. And, you know, they were able to bomb a whole bunch of it, and they just kind of just left them to their own devices. So, like, that makes a lot more sense in the grand scheme of things than the whole world being overrun by one specific outbreak, which is another thing I liked, because they were able to contain the spread. Like, that's usually not something you see in, like, zombie movies or zombie shows. So let's talk about this team of ragtag mercenaries and random assortments that are really, you know, a good team if you look at them, where they're set up. But most horror movies, there's some people on like these teams that you just know are going to be cannon fodder. And from the second they're on screen, you're like, yep, that person's going to die early and that person's going to die quick, you know, stuff like that. And that one's going to die horribly. There's only really one person that really expected to die, and of course he did, Theo Rossi's character, Burt Cummings. He has a great feel for the bad guy role, and I remember when I first saw him as like this hacker biker with a shaved mohawk with tattoos on the side of his head as Juice in Sons of Anarchy. So like that's really awesome to see him doing a lot of stuff. Like, you know, he was in the Luke Cage TV show, and he's been in a lot of stuff, obviously, but the Luke Cage super nerd stuff that I watch, he's in. It's really great to see him doing great work. So the team we have, you got Dave Bautista as the leader, Ana de la Guerra, I hope I said that right. I probably didn't. And Omari Hardwick as a number 1, 2, and 3. They're both great characters. Hardwick's character was one of the standouts, and I will likely be a big part of the sequels. Then you have Tig Notaro as one of the funniest people on the planet. If you haven't seen her stand-ups, you definitely got to check it out. Her dry humor was one of the very best parts of this movie for me, because it was just placed at perfect times. It's the only time that anyone was really trying to make a joke, but they landed so well because of her dry wit that it was just beautiful. I mean, the crazy chopper pilot who smokes cigars right next to a do not smoke sign that is attached to a giant barrel of gasoline. I mean, and I just love how she accepted to be on the team. $2 million, that's my share just for me. $2 million if it pans out. 100% I'm in. Yeah. Then when asked why she doesn't want to know the risk, why would I want to know the risk? $2 million? That's a lot of cash. Listen, I hate my life so deeply. If I had $2 million, my life would change drastically. And so I'm going to be honest with you. When I initially watched the movie a few times just to start to think about stuff for the episode, I didn't really notice until I was really doing the review right now in this breakdown that one of the underlying themes was humanity's greed and how it knows no bound. So, like, this bank heist is, you know, a front for getting the queen's head in order to be able to make more alpha zombies. Like, literally, one zombie almost started a damn apocalypse and, like, took over all of Vegas. And here is the government, like, which is heavily implied to have either created or at least discovered the zombie in the first place, with this rich bad guy trying to get the means to make a zombie army. Like, seriously? Like, that's where we're going with that? Like, how are you guys this corrupt? You know, it's a good allegory for, you know, what many people think of the governments these days all around the world. But, you know, whatever. And that's going to be a recurring theme, that their greed is their downfall. But I digress. I really liked Raul Castillo's Mikey Guzman. At first, when I first initially saw him, I was like,
oh yeah, I'm going to hate this guy. I can't wait to watch this guy die. And then, you know, but from the second he said his line, excuse me, to Batista, when he asked him, how would he like to make 500K? And he says, who do I have to kill? And Batista's reaction was mine too. I love him. And then Samantha Wynn played the role of Chambers, who's one of Guzman's crew. The other guy bounced, so I'm not even going to mention him in the movie. In the review. She was such a badass. The scene where the zombies were hibernating was another one of those bold takes in Snyder in this movie for me, because they were all like frozen, like in suspended animation, like as if they were like puppets dancing and someone just, you know, stopped. And honestly, that was more frightening than most like real horror in this movie for that matter, but all zombie movies. And like, it was just creepy because I mean, they were these, it's this swarm of basically human locust cannibals, and they're like walking through them like a little like labyrinth. And you know, it was really kind of terrifying. And then of course they woke, and she had to fight her way out. And I was so like hoping she would make it out. At the same time, almost would have been disappointed if she somehow did make it. Because like, this girl went from admitting that she's never killed anything to almost throwing up with the first kill, and then basically turning into Chambers zombie slayer, and just like murking bitches. Like, she was like tearing through them like they were butter, and then like the way she died, you know, she like, you have this moment where she busts out that window, and you're like, oh man, she's gonna make it, and then she doesn't. And honestly, I wouldn't. It's a lot more believable. I mean, it was almost hard to believe that she even made it through that window. Like when we last saw her, it looks like she was sworn for sure and dead. But like the fact that she still, you know, even though she came so close, she ended up not making it, and that was honestly a good choice by Snyder, in my opinion. Now, arguably, my favorite character in the entire movie. And I apologize, I am sure I'm going to butcher this name. Matthias Schweighofer, played Dieter. He seriously steals every single scene he's in. And he was just a pleasure to watch. Another truly dynamic character. Like at the beginning, you know, he's like, how do we kill the zombies exactly? And then like, he was just so innocent, and you know, he didn't know where to put his straps and everything, and everyone kind of like was like, oh, this guy's going to be a problem. And then by the end of his part in the movie, he's a character that you're just like, wow, he was so amazing. And why? No. Just like the scene itself. Because, you know, he died saving one of the team, and he ended up, you know, getting pulled out, and we didn't even see, you know, there was a couple characters, and I talked about the deaths that I love in this one, and I'll talk about that a little more later, but there's a lot of characters that died off screen, which is kind of interesting. Almost like you don't know what happened to them. It's almost like better than anything they could have shot, you know, like, because your mind can just race. But like, he was so absolutely funny, like, but it was in a very organic way, just by being his character. Like, he wasn't telling jokes per se, but the way he told something or the way he chose to phrase something or his reaction was just hilarious, and it was great, and it wasn't forced. Like when he was asked if he was gonna do it, he says, it's a doorway to another realm, my friends, and Providence has brought you to me. We go through it together. And he dropped these lines like that all throughout the movie. And admittedly, it was one of the few people that I was hoping would survive. And unfortunately, he didn't. I have to admit, initially, I didn't like Ella Purnell, who plays Kate Ward, which is Batista's daughter. She just screamed like the character in every zombie movie that does some stupid shit and just gets one of the characters you love killed. gladly it was not the case. She actually was not that bad. My first impression was obviously was not correct. I mean, when she fucking clocked Lily in the face, I was like, oh, damn. Like, maybe this character is going to be all right. Now, granted, there were some parts of what she did that were kind of annoying. Like doing the one thing you're not supposed to do. Like, you know, running off on your own while a horde of zombies are attacking you. I mean, seriously. But that last scene with her and Batista, you know, when they're talking about the... Because all throughout the movie, whenever he got a chance, Batista's character was talking to his daughter about opening like a food truck type thing. One of the suggestions was like tofu plates. You can make anything out of tofu. But in the end, you know, everybody loves goddamn lobster roll. Everyone does love lobster roll, except for people who are allergic to a lobster. That may not be a proven fact, but I'm going to accept that as headcanon right here, right now. But that final scene with her and him, like when she had to take him out, was like truly, truly heartbreaking. And I did tear up. I'm not going to lie. Then again, I'm going to butcher this name probably too. Nora Arnezeder plays the Coyote Lily. She was the guide to the characters, and Snyder used her brilliantly as also a guide for the audience, as well as like she was a perfect choice to be like an exposition character because she's the Coyote. You know, she was sneaking in there all the time, and she knows the rules and everything like that. So it makes sense for her to be explaining things to the characters, which then technically is explaining it to us. A truly brilliant decision by Snyder. And like that's part of what makes a great story and a great movie is when you don't have to have all these exposition pieces. Like, yes, at some point in most movies, you gotta explain something, you know, to set up the world, the mythos, something, because you know, it's an original thing. You need to like explain it. So having a character that would have to explain it to everyone else anyways, be that amazing. Just amazing. Proof that you just need to let Zack Snyder do his thing. And finally you got Garrett Dillon Hunt as the stereotypical head of security to the rich bad guy of the film that, you know, one way or another is going to screw the team over and you get someone killed more than likely and praying for the moment that they get what they deserve. And of course he's the reason for Chambers' death and actually for a lot of it really. Because if they would have been able to get out of that hatch, they probably would have all survived, including Dieter and what's his name? Vandero. I've watched that movie like five times at this point, and I still can't say it. I can't still get to say the name of his name right. Dang, I can't even talk right now. All right, so moving on. But to be honest with you, Garrett's character really did walk a tightrope between someone you wanted to see die versus someone you kind of liked. I mean, just doing his job. Like his line about the zombie tigers, that's a goddamn zombie tiger. That's crossing the line. Like, honestly, that almost won me over for him, for his character, right then and there. I mean, granted, he did some terrible shit later, but I mean, that was really almost like, I was like, whoa, okay, that was a good one. And I really liked, so this movie, like I was saying, is a whole bunch of tropes mixed into one. And one of the tropes of many, like, zombie and, like, just kind of, like, let's say war or battle movies is, like, that 360 pan around the survivors battling in a seemingly endless horde and somehow they survive. Zack used that as almost, like, a meta joke because he even broke it. It broke the fourth wall, technically, was not to us, but it was to the person telling the story during the bank heist meeting, the stereotypical bank heist meeting with Bly Tanaka, played by the legendary Hiroki Sanada, which you might know from one of his many, many movies. But most recently, he played Scorpion in the Mortal Kombat movie, which I mentioned in the first part of this episode. Now, the relationship between Dieter and Dieter? Wow. Yeah, Dieter and Vanderoe was dynamic from the entire movie. Vanderoe first initially hated him because he, you know, was pretty much something he was going to have to protect, and he felt like he was going to end up getting him killed. You can just tell that's what it was. And then he just kind of grew on him, and in that very short time, they developed a very special and close bond. Their manner of speaking in elegant fashion and quoting and having those like inspirational type quotes, and not necessarily being exposition characters, because that's not what they were, but they were more like monologuing characters. There we go. And they kind of just, you know, bonded over that. And I really wish we could have gotten more of that, to be honest, but it would have definitely increased the runtime. I mean, can we get like a, like, I know Netflix already announced that the Snyder, this is the Snyder cut, but I want them to like go back and reshoot like a deleted, like a long extended deleted scene of them just hanging out and talking like while he's trying to do things. Like, I feel like that would be so amazing. And please get that done. Please, Netflix, that'd be sweet. So Snyder's choice to have like alpha zombies that like were definitely like leading the more, you know, standard type zombie, the mindless drone, was something I really did like. I will admit, I started writing a zombie apocalypse novel many, many years ago. I think it's probably about, it's probably been over almost a decade at this point, probably about 7 years or so since I started it, and still nowhere near done. But I digress. I had a very similar idea with the alphas. I didn't really have them all, you know, like forming like a society type thing like he did, which was a place that I honestly wasn't brave enough to take it. And honestly, this is why I stopped watching like Walking Dead and most zombie shows, because I was writing a zombie novel and they were all influencing my work, and I didn't want to do that. Because now I feel like I'm going to change that. I've already thought about restarting the whole thing and just starting from scratch and trying to bang it out in less than a year and just go from there. But again, I digress. So let's talk about, let's see, where was I? I definitely went off on a tangent right there. Okay. So yeah, I said, yeah, he went further in, then, like I said, I would have gone because they were basically following like a king and queen, but they worshipped their king almost like a zombie god, which why he has a fitting name of Zeus. He lives in Olympus. That makes sense. So let's talk about Zeus. I mean, wow, what a really cool character. I mean, oh, that guy put on the helm, like literally, like he was like, I'm going to battle, man. Where is my my helmet and my zombie horse and my rebar spear. Let's do this shit. But like, wow. But we have to talk about something that has very, very, very gross implications for what really triggered this whole like mini war. Martin, of course, being the bad guy, head of security, kills the queen and takes her head. When Zeus finds her, he carries her back and like this mourning fashion and like plunges his hands into her stomach. And I honestly didn't know what the hell he was doing. And then he pulls out this glowing blue zombie baby that ends up dying in his arms, in his hands, as the blue fades from his body. And that blue like glow shows a connection to Zeus. So he kind of feels like almost like the zombie equivalent to Dracula, where he's the first and the purest, and like many renditions, he can either control characters or even see through their eyes, like in, you know, The Strain, through like a shared neural link. So like I said, he did, it was very bold and was absolutely daring to have the queen pregnant. And the implications of that are almost too horrifying to think of. I mean, how the hell do zombies fuck? I mean, damn, I hope you all don't have as active and vivid imagination as I do, because I'm pretty sure I have the feeling that that's going to be my newest reoccurring nightmare. But I digress. So I love that Snyder put in that line about a free country. When Martin says it's not a free country, they're not in America anymore. And then Scott Ward, you know, honestly, I got to pause. I just realized that I never actually said Batista's character's name until right now. And as many people know, I script this show, and I noticed it when I was writing the script, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna purposely leave that in there, just saying for authenticity's sake. But Scott, excuse me, technically, he says technically makes it an even freer country, right? I mean, as Sam Wilson would say, Captain America, he would say, I mean, he's out of line, but he's not wrong. So let's talk about Vannero's little speech in the bank at the end of the bank vault about endless loop. So he goes on about how, what if, like, the bodies that were just sitting there of the form of the first team that tried to break in was from an alternate timeline, and that Tanaka is some evil ringmaster. And they put an overlay of the bodies of the other team that failed and died there, that like kind of imprinted that they were characters that we were seeing. So as it seems, all right, see, it's confusing because he had so many good points. So think back to the when they first came into the casino. They found extra blueprints, you know, now they found the second team. So is everything as it seems, or could this potentially be the cross-section point in the space-time continuum where all other futures and past collide and it's actually an alternate timeline version that failed? When he literally says in a mind-bending reveal, it starts all over again, seems to rule that out, you know. But could that be a possible smokescreen for what is really happening here? Or could this be, because I could totally see that being something Snyder could do, but probably not. But I mean, when he started talking, my mind started spinning down so many rabbit holes of possibilities, and I just had to bring it up. More on that later. Moving on. I really loved the bit with the traps. And the endless rotating door of zombies to send through the gauntlet again and again. It was a really funny bit that wasn't like an actual joke. When the nuke gets pushed up and they go to ask Dieter about how he's doing, he snaps and goes off on Scott. Talk about a dynamic shift, man. I mean, he was a soft-spoken safecracker who was worried about how to kill zombies, and now he's yelling at a room full of literal, professional, tough guys and girls. It makes it easier to believe he would actually be fighting until the last breath and the end, saving Vannero when Zeus was coming for him. Pardon me while I take a sip of my tasty beverage. Okay. So I know I touched on this earlier, but before I get off track, with that disgusting thought train from earlier, Zeus shows up on that horse with a damn rebar spear. Like, he's on a zombie horse with a rebar spear, and then he puts that helm on. No joke. I was like, that zombie just put on a fucking helmet. Holy fuck. Like, I mean, it almost had a Night King feel. You know, like where from Game of Thrones, where he was this like almost demon sorcerer that could control the dead. Like, that's almost what it felt like for me. Now, in one of the things that felt inevitable because of the chemistry that they had, Scott and Maria, which was, by the way, was Anna's character that I forgot to mention earlier as well, they have this heart to heart and they have this reconciliation as Scott realizes that he was wrong about him and Kate, him and Anna. And then, you know, once they realize Kate ran off to go be a freaking superhero in a zombie apocalypse, watching that scene, like, they had that heart-to-heart and, like, oh, I thought I messed that up forever, you know, and forever is a long time. I knew she was going to die. I was like, oh, here it comes. That was one of the few that I predicted, but I definitely didn't see it happening like the way it did. And then when that zombie literally snapped her neck and turned her head around and then the spine busted out of her back and the blood splatter on, like, the screen was a really nice touch, too. Like, almost like, oh, you just got hit in the face yourself with it. That was the last thing I thought was going to happen. I definitely thought she was going to be, like, swarmed by zombies or something and he wouldn't be able to save her. But having him, like, just stand there, like, powerless to stop her from being literally have her head spin was really interesting and really fun to see, honestly. Like, there's just so much to like about this movie. It's also fitting, though. Like, at least the last thing she saw was not the zombie that killed her, but the man that she loved. And then it was great to see Scott go all beast mode on multiple zombies. And I did like how they were able to dot. Like, one of them was able to, like, almost ninja move out of the way. And it ended up creating a very great fight scene right there. So back to that greed theme I was talking about earlier. So you got everyone running, getting out, you know, because they know they're about to be overrun by zombies and alpha zombies for that matter. Dieter and Guzman directly die because of their greed, because they failed to leave the money. And then Vanderloo ends up getting bit by Zeus, as we find out at the end there. Like, almost not really a post credit scene, but like a post movie scene almost, that just sets up the sequels. And then here we go. Zeus' character bites him and starts the loop over again. So, as I said, we were talking about earlier, it seems like he spoiled the ending, because that's exactly what happened. So, I'm going to go back and watch Dawn of the Dead and, like, really try to see if I can find a character that may have become Zeus. Like, maybe there was some character that had a similar build that maybe could be a connecting tissue. But more on that after I do my deep dive on that, because that's going to be really deep, that I'm going to have to look at every single character in the foreground, background, everything. So that might take a while. And then I have to admit, back to the movie, that it was fitting that Martin died at the jaws of the zombie tiger. I mean, it was gruesome, and I couldn't have asked for a more fitting end to that asshole. I was so happy to see that tiger literally bite his head off. The fight battle sequence as they escaped the hotel was one of my favorite in the entire movie. Batista was amazing, and everything he did seemed believable. Like, a well-trained merc of his size and strength could definitely take out as many as he did. There were only two parts for me that were a little bit unbelievable. The first part was when he threw that table. Like, it went a little too far for me for it to be. I don't know if he's really strong enough to throw a poker table that far. I mean, those things are not light, you know. But that, again, you know, it's fine. No big deal. And then the other one was when he was literally running across poker tables like this giant crouching tiger, hidden dragon, while shooting. I'm not sitting here saying that Dave or even his character couldn't be agile enough to pull that off. But don't get me wrong, the man weighs almost 300 pounds. And that's, of solid muscle. And then that's not including his gear. I mean, I just don't know if the tables could support him running across them like that. That's all I'm saying. Now, Guzman, I think, had the best death of all the team members that we got to see. Because some of them, we had a lot of deaths off screen, which was almost... it kind of is very intriguing because you don't know how they died, so it could be even gruesome. Like, excuse me, the limit of how horrible they died is just a stretch of your imagination.
But like, you know, like I said, when I first saw this guy, I mean, he's basically a YouTuber that was going and just killing zombies to get famous. But, you know, he had all those bags and a zombie was able to pull him down. He got bit and he just said, fuck it, and pulls the pins on the grenade and takes out a shit ton of zombies and allows Scott and Lily to escape. Now, honestly, I really feel like my favorite scene in the entire movie was the elevator scene. Like when they get out there to escape, they're all like huffing and puffing. The elevator turns on. Do you really want to hurt me? Do you really want to make me cry? Like, really? Don't really hurt. Do you really want to hurt me? From the Culture Club is what is on a soundtrack for a zombie apocalypse movie. Like, it's brilliant. Like, it fits so well for like almost unbelievable, like how well it fits, really. And it's a little ironic, though, that the one of my favorite scenes has no zombies in it at all. And then when, you know, when Lily sacrifices her to let Scott escape in the helicopter, and, you know, she has, because she did a little switcheroo, so she had the queen's head, and the queen's still alive, you know. She threatens it, and let's Dave get out of there. Dave. Yeah, well, it's his character, sorry. Scott, get out of there. And then when she drops the head all the way down to the concrete, it just, like, liquefies in a splatter. And like I said, her death is one that you don't see, because he just, you know, gets all close and personal with her. I mean, you would think that he probably bit her to try to make her an alpha, but after what happens, is that doesn't really matter, you know? I almost wish we would have seen like him like rip her head off and throw it like right after it, you know, and would have like exploded right next to her. And I will admit, you know, when they were escaping, I thought for sure that Zeus was going to like have like a one-on-one fight on that rooftop with Scott. But I'm kind of glad it didn't happen, because we got something better anyways. And I just love that one-liner from Peter's, another great one. Was that a zombie in a goddamn cape? Like, seriously, like, think about how crazy that would be to see if this was real life and you see zombies before, but you see one with a freaking cape on. And she didn't even see him with the helmet on. Can you imagine if she would have saw the helmet? She would have probably freaked out and crashed the helicopter. I mean, but, and, you know, one thing I'm really glad at is that, like, no one got some, like, stupid lucky shot on Zeus. Because, you know, it wasn't, like, a full, like, helmet that protected everything. Like, his mouth was exposed. You know, his eyes were exposed. But no one got, like, a cheap shot directly into his eye or anything. That was really good. I'm really glad that happened. I've always thought about, like, what would be the most terrifying thing? And I thought, a zombie with a helmet. I mean, it's literally unkillable if you have the proper helmet on. But I digress. And hold on. Again, let me take a quick swig of my tasty beverage. And then, okay, so we have... I definitely thought there was going to be, like I said earlier a little while ago, because I got distracted. A rooftop, like, one-on-one battle, but we didn't get it. And Zeus jumps in the helicopter, and as he's fighting with Scott, the pilot gets shot, you know, and you see her blood splatter on the window. And, you know, while Scott and Zeus are fighting, he literally, like, breaks his arm. And, like, think about how much force he would have had to do that to Batista. Now, Batista has layers upon layers of tough muscle, and he was able to break through the skin and have his bones showing. So that's, you know, you got to think how crazy strong Zeus really was. And I love how when Peter's wiped her blood off of the windshield, the first thing she sees is a nuke, just basically like from bad to the worst possible situation ever. And you know, in the altercation, you know, is that Scott gets bit, but he does manage to get a perfect headshot, ending Zeus's reign. And then the helicopter crashes, and, you know, no one really survives except for the two, mommy and father and daughter. And I know I didn't see the other chick she was with at the end of there, but that the way Snyder framed the final chat between father and daughter was really, really beautiful, with the sun rising behind her, the red moon rising. It was almost like, you know, that don't go into the light, but he was going into the light. And when she said, he goes, I'm a coward. She goes, you're not the coward. You're the bravest man I know. Every time I watch that part, I start to cry. You know, I'm literally like a little bit teary-eyed right now just thinking about it, because I'm replaying it in my head as I'm saying it. But then when she aims the gun at her father and turns the focus from the gun back to her to see her reaction before she threw it away, it was almost reminiscent of the Joker scene, the Snyder Cut, where he focused on the card and his face is all blurry and then focus back on his face. So then, you know, then we have when I first watched this, the film, and I saw Vannero come out of the whole tunnel with surviving and just able to walk through a nuclear bomb strike. You know, in retrospect, it's fine because he's basically, you know, a zombie and an alpha, so whatever. And I don't think there's zombies has ever been in a zombie movie, to my opinion, to my knowledge, Zombies from the Cranberries. But again, another song that is almost too much on the nose, but for some reason worked perfectly again. I mean, it really was fantastic. And then finally, the overall reason that the zombie virus is even going to continue is due to greed. I mean, think about it. So when Vannero escaped with all that money, he wouldn't have been able to go very far, and he probably would have been able to be tracked. But then he goes to this airstrip and finds a private plane, and he rents it because he dropped all that money, and they were like, okay, let's you know, do it. So now there is a new alpha, a new zombie god, and now he's in a new country to start the cycle all over again. So my final thoughts on this fantastic movie, in my opinion, like I love it. So I will, and I'm a fan of anything zombie. Like I'll watch a horrible zombie movie the entire time and find something at least I like about it, even if it was because it was so bad. So my final thoughts is just that it was really good, and I'm glad that Netflix learned from Warner Brothers' mistakes and just let him do his thing. And now they have the start of a very, very good franchise. And I'm just so happy to see Snyder being able to be himself and make what he wants, and us to get to enjoy it as he initially envisioned it, without a studio behind him being like, no, you can't do that. Like, you really think, like, let's just say for argument's sake that this was a DC, like some random DC title that they had, you know what I mean? Or some indie comic that they bought, you know, and they tried to make that movie. You know damn well they would have made him cut that baby scene just because of the implications. They wouldn't want to be, like, even associated with possible zombies having sex, you know what I mean? Like, so that was important because it drove the reason for the quick change in going from orderly society to just a full out war. So, in summation, I am very impressed, and I'm very, very much a fan of this this new property, and I can't wait to see where it goes in both directions, the future and the past, with a prequel and a sequel already confirmed and greenlit from Netflix. All right, so that sums up the what started as a review and turned into a kind of breakdown of Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. So I want to give you a little preview about what's coming down the pipe for Nerd Tween and Movie Podcast. I just locked in interviews with Big Time Collectibles, which they are a great comic book distributor that they have, you know, certain comics, the regular covers, the A and B covers, but they mostly focus on exclusive variants. And I am a big fan of their product, and I reached out, and we're going to talk and have them on the podcast. And as I mentioned before, we have Ario Anandito, a talented Marvel, DC, and indie comic book artist. And I still have, hopefully it's going to happen, but it's still not yet confirmed, interview with someone who's making a lot of waves right now in the comic selling industry. And coming up will be information on the first ever solo Nerdtween live sale. Definitely going to want to subscribe, follow, and do all that stuff, so you don't want to miss any of the episodes coming up, because I got a lot of great stuff coming down. And don't be surprised if I get an exclusive on either Black Panther 2 or She-Hulk, or maybe even Suicide Squad or The Conjuring. The Conjuring knows out, so I won't need to get a scoop for that. But I've got a lot of things working. I really hope you enjoy the content so far. And just believe me, more and bigger and brighter are still to come. Thank you again for joining me yet again for another episode of Nerdtween the Movie Podcast. This two-part episode was a joy to make, and I hope you felt the same about listening to it. If you're listening to this on YouTube, please do me a favor and leave me a comment and a like and a share, so I know if you liked it and if you shared it, and if you have any constructive or negative criticism. I'll take either at this point, because good comment, bad comment, all helps the algorithm. So again, thank you so much for joining me, and have a great rest of your day. And for another episode, this is Nerdpool Prime signing off.